Marriage is a very old institution, yet a very hot topic at the same time. Tomorrow is the day the U.S. Supreme Court hears oral arguments on a case on same-sex marriage. The decision is weeks, perhaps months away. Coincidentally, tomorrow is also the day the Oregon Humanities Conversation Project puts on a conversation about marriage on the road in Grants Pass and Medford. Something old, something new is the appropriate name for the discussions. 9:30 in the morning tomorrow at the Medford Library, 1:30 in the afternoon at the Rogue Community College Redwood campus in Grants Pass. Leslie Dunlap, an assistant professor at Willamette University, will be the moderator, and she's our guest today on the Jefferson Exchange. Leslie, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jeffrey.
Well, this is a big, meaty issue you got picked to moderate. You apparently teach something about this already at Willamette?
Yes, I do. I teach the history of American families, history of women in the United States, and history of social movements. So I'm trained as an historian. I didn't think I'd be plunged into the middle of controversy.
Have you had the Conversation Project already, or is this a debut tomorrow?
No, this is actually the culmination of 2 years of conversations that I facilitated across Oregon, and it's been really interesting, the coincidences, the timely coincidences. My first talk was in February 2014 on Valentine's Day, and that first discussion was also happened to be the launch of a campaign for the rights of Oregonians to marry, and groups were pushing for the right of same-sex couples to marry. And we're hoping to put a referendum on the ballot. And it so happened that that did not come about. So my second talk was in the fall of 2014. And this was not on the ballot because of, court decisions in Oregon. And the Attorney General had decided not to support the ban, the constitutional ban on marriage. And only two people showed up the night before the election. So it went from being a really hot political topic to no one showing up to now a lot more interest as the cases wend their way to the Supreme Court, which is happening, as you noted, tomorrow.
And are you making any specific references to the Supreme Court case as part of the Conversation Project tomorrow?
Well, I certainly think it will come up. The way I have framed this conversation and the way Oregon Humanities has framed it has been to locate these current debates in a longer history. So I never wanted it to be only about current debates about who has the right to marry. And I think one of the really interesting things that these debates bring up is the debate about marriage has made us stop and pause and think, okay, what is marriage? So when people say, well, there are 1,237 benefits associated with it, I don't know if that's the correct number. The question is, well, why are those benefits associated with marriage? What is marriage anyway? And I think it's, such a familiar and longstanding institution that for a long time historians thought we knew what it was, but in fact, as one historian has said, it's like a sphinx. It's this monumental thing on the public landscape, but it's actually full of secrets. And so there's been a huge wave of histories of marriage that have come out, really beginning in the 1990s and hot off the presses every day.
Well, I guess I could just work off a couple of assumptions myself that on one hand you might think, well, marriage has been this way for a very long time. But then again, there have been other issues with who gets to marry, as in interracial couples, that probably have been factors in Oregon's history in the past.
Oh, yes, yes. In the discussion that's going to be happening tomorrow, I put on my historian's hat and talk about really what I see as two huge revolutions in marriage that we aren't used to thinking about as revolutions in marriage necessarily. And the first is, as you say, the question of who has the right to marry each other. And between 1600 and 1967, there were laws preventing people from marrying across what we would call the color line or what we would call interracial marriage, but which was known as miscegenation. And those laws were not confined to the South or to the 19th century. They, in fact, were a prominent part of modern American law and Oregon law. So that in Oregon, it was not permissible for a white person to marry someone of Native American descent, of African American descent, or even of Hawaiian descent or Asian descent.
Really? They had to, white people had to marry white people, was what it got down to?
Yes. Or that black people could not marry white people, or Asian American people could not marry white people. And that was not found to be unconstitutional in Oregon until, I believe, 1951. And then at the federal level, the 1967 court case was called Loving versus Virginia, which found that the state bans on interracial marriage were unconstitutional.
I've noticed many times the irony of the case being called Loving.
Yes, yes. Although I think there's one currently in the Supreme Court case tomorrow, I think, is four consolidated cases. And one of them is Love versus something. But Love is against extending the right to marry to same-sex couples. So that's a double irony, I guess.
Absolutely. Leslie Dunlap's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, assistant professor at Willamette University, historian by trade, and will be the moderator of the Something Old, Something New Oregon Conversation on Marriage, put on by Oregon Humanities. Sessions tomorrow in both Medford and Grants Pass. You can join us now on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area, 800-838-3760, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. You said there are two huge revolutions in marriage. One of them was the racial component. What was the other?
Yes, the other, I think, is the less known. Have you ever heard of a concept called couverture?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Couverture was a legal principle that held that the husband covered his wife in public matters. And this was derived from English common law. And an English jurist, William Blackstone, put it this way. He said that the very being or legal existence of the woman is suspended during the marriage, or at least is incorporated and consolidated into that of the husband, under whose protection, wing, and cover she performs everything. Well, that's a big mouthful. I like to think about it as an umbrella, and the images of a husband holding an umbrella over his wife. And this concept really dominated the law of domestic relations in the 19th century, legally and arguably socially and culturally into our own time, so that married women, for example, could not sign contracts of their own accord that had to be done by the husband.
They couldn't really own property, could they?
No, they could not own property. If they had inherited property from their fathers, for example, that property became the husband's. And that included household goods, and in the South, that included slaves. So interestingly, one of the first challenges to that law was from slave owners who wished to give slaves to their daughters and didn't want to see those slaves sold by an errant husband or a gambling husband or a impecunious husband. So it's an interesting fact that couverture and the law of domestic relations also intersected with that history of slavery that I mentioned earlier in terms of the anti-miscegenation laws. But women could not make decisions about their children, or the apprenticeship of their children, that legal right belonged to the husband or father. They could not keep their own wages. They could not bring suits before court. They were considered to be covered politically by their husband, and that was the basis for opposition against women's suffrage.
Oh, because the household is voting in the person of the man.
Yes, yes. And so we know that all those things have been challenged, but at the time when women and others started agitating for married women to be able to hold and maintain their property even within marriage, people argued, including one Oregon legislator, that this would be the end of marriage, that there would be a huge number of divorces that would follow if women were entitled to their own property. And we know that that did not happen. But the opposition at the time was, quite ardent.
Well, it's an interesting historical point to look at because, when we hear about the declarations of horrible things that will happen if X happens, either because of voters or because of legislative bodies. In fact, the same claims have been made about many, many laws back through the years.
Yes. Yes. I think another interesting kind of wrinkle or counterintuitive question is that in 1967, in the Loving versus Virginia case, which you mentioned, the court was far ahead of social opinion in many ways. I believe it was a 9-0 or 8-1 decision saying that these bans on interracial marriage were unconstitutional. At the time, though, 72% of Americans, and I believe that's white Americans, believed that interracial marriage should be illegal, should not be authorized. So the court was really far ahead of social and public opinion. In the case of same-sex marriage that we're hearing about tomorrow, that is the opposite is true. The court has been rather slow to take this up, although the changes recently seem very, very fast. In fact, the first federal court case to address this issue was in 1970.
Really, that long ago?
Yes, and then it wasn't. And that was dismissed because it didn't have a federal component, according to the Supreme Court justices. But then it was 26 years later that Hawaii was the first state to rule that denying same-sex couples the right to marry violated Hawaii's equal protection clause. So that was 26 years before that happened. And then 2003 and 2004 was really where the tide turned and where we saw people applying for marriage licenses here in Oregon as well.
We are talking to Leslie Dunlap, an assistant professor at Willamette University, about marriage, because she'll be the moderator at the Something Old, Something New Oregon Conversation on Marriage with stops tomorrow morning at 9:30 at the Medford Library and 1:30 in the afternoon at the Rogue Community College Redwood campus in Grants Pass. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 around the region. And all by email at jx@jeffnet.org. Steve and Eugene, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Howdy. Since its inception, apparently, marriage has always been a sacrament, a sacred religious rite. We have this minor thing called the First Amendment to the Constitution saying states not supposed to get into that kind of stuff. I have thought for years now that if you want to get married, you go to the church. But if you want to have all the rights that are currently associated with marriage, that should come from the state. So that, like France, like Italy, you go first to the city hall, perform a civil union, which indicates that you guys are committed to each other, you're going to go through life together, and then if you want to get married, you go to the church and do it there. But getting married in the church does not guarantee that you have these other rights. I think these two entities should be more separated than they are, and I don't see what the state's doing in marriage in the first place.
All right. Thanks for the thought, Steve. Appreciate that. So, Leslie, as a historian, I mean, were there times when these were separate things? You got the license and the legal distinction in one place, and you got the bonding under God in another place?
I think it's a very complicated history, certainly, but legislators have always defined and redefined marriage, both the nature of the contract and who could marry, from this country's inception, at least. And I think the fact that, from its origins, it's been a sacrament, I also think it's been a changing sacrament. And looking at changing religious ideals about marriage is really important to look at as well. The idea that religious views about marriage have not changed is ahistorical. For example, if you look at the idea of Catholics marrying non-Catholics, that was one time the source of excommunication. Or a Catholic marrying a Catholic, but not before a Catholic minister was, a reason for excommunication. And certainly in the past few years, various churches have really looked at this question quite seriously. And I believe that the majority of most major religious groups now embrace marriage equality, and I know that at least 2,000 groups signed one of these briefs to the Supreme Court in support of marriage equality. And so even if you look at the changing nature of wedding vows in a marriage ceremony, many people are no longer choosing to have the clause love, honor, and obey. Even in changing liturgy and changing religious practices and changing wedding customs, I think even as a sacrament or a covenant, ideas about that covenant or sacrament have changed.
So it's always evolving, in essence.
I think so, yes. And I think, to think of it as a dynamic, flexible institution, I think is, to me, very reassuring in that it's able to change with society, but also provide a source of stability and history and connection, and so that it's a counterweight to individualism, I think, in many ways. at the same time, it enshrines ideals of individual connection and self-expression.
You know, what the caller, Steve, describes is in essence, the civil union idea that I think Vermont pioneered a few years back, where we weren't talking about it as marriage, we were talking about it as civil unions. And it seems like that's been swept away rather quickly with a lot of feelings against a gay marriage, that the resistance seems to have dropped away, and now we're talking strictly about marriage, and civil unions is not even really on the table anymore.
Yeah, it does seem as if it has focused very much on marriage, and I think that has to do with that question of the way we organize health care and Social Security and retirement and all kinds of state legislation, so that marriage has become a point or a nexus for the allocation of rights and benefits, and that's channeled through employers and through marriage. That's very different than in other European countries, where health care and Social Security and retirement are considered a part of individual citizenship. They aren't necessarily channeled through marriage and employers.
You know, I'm curious, when we talk about the speed with which things have changed, I'm curious to know, for example, just within a four-year college career, if some of the people you're teaching as seniors had very different feelings when they were freshmen. I mean, it certainly seems like the general state of things around them was very different 3 years ago.
Yes. Well, I first began talking about this subject with parents, actually, for family weekends at Willamette University. And there was a huge range of opinion, and I was very interested to see, you know, people had a different perspective based on their careers. There were many lawyers who wanted to talk about property law. There were people who were caterers to weddings who wanted to talk about what this would mean for the wedding industry. And so parents were very, very invested in the question. Students seemed a little less concerned about it, or certainly in support. You know, I've seen support for same-sex marriage and marriage equality grow, but it almost seems like a non-issue for many. In that, for example, I'll use my own family. I told my dad I'd be on the radio, and he said, oh, that's going to be a really sensitive, hot topic, and you've got to prepare. And my son, who's 13, said, what if no one calls in? So I just think that does indicate the generational difference. Certainly, every single poll indicates that there's a generational divide and that young people overwhelmingly support same-sex marriage rights, and more older people oppose it. That said, in my conversations across Oregon, I've been very, very struck by the diversity of opinion about marriage, not even in terms of who can marry, but what is marriage and what are the dynamics of marriage and what are the kind of power relations within marriage, so that I've been very impressed by older people who lived through, who were married really before the 1970s, before feminism and some of the social changes of the 60s and 70s, who lived through those changes and navigated through their marriages in the midst of those social revolutions, really. So, for example, when I talk about coverture, many older women nod knowingly and then have their own stories to say, yes, I was not able to open a bank account in my own name, or I had to ask my husband's permission to remove funds from our joint account, but he didn't have to ask for my permission.
Right.
And so to me, that really brings home the kind of way that this concept of coverture has really wound its way into some of our conceptions about marriage today. I've also been really struck by the fact that people who I might immediately assume are gender nonconforming and rather radical have very traditional notions about who should do what work in a marriage, that one partner should stay home and parent and one should mm-hmm. go out and be the breadwinner. And they are very staunch in that notion that marriage is for children and for raising children and that the children should come first, right, not the desires or goals of the individual partners.
Let's take another call. Here's Ron and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Leslie Dunlap. We're talking about marriage.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. Two things. One of them is that, you know, as you were saying earlier on the show, that, you know, that there were a lot of folks who were opposed to these different changes in the marriage laws, saying that it would increase divorce rates. And it seems to me, at least, in fact, divorce rates have increased and have increased significantly. And I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, I think it's kind of a good thing because some people get married when they shouldn't and are in abusive relationships, should get out of them. But that seemed to me, at least with regard to, you know, the fact that divorce rates have increased. I think the last stats I read said about half of all marriages in the divorce. But so that's one piece of I just wanted to hear a comment about. The other one was that it seems that also most of these laws around who can get married and who can't have some sort of religious foundation. And it seems to me that as we're seeing now, you know, on the current issue around gay marriages, that, you know, churches are changing their stories, are changing their tunes.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it was back then, even like the day of, in terms of the days of slavery and the days of mixed marriages, you know, they were quick to point to different parts of the Bible, for example, on the Christian side, you know, saying that, you know, the Bible says this, or, you know, that the man's the dominant person in the...
All right,
you know,
so like, the point being the religious foundation of the laws. Let's give Leslie a chance to respond. We only have about a minute left. So, Leslie, divorce and laws with religious foundation. Ron, thanks for the call.
Okay, quickly on divorce, it's very interesting to me in my audiences for these conversations. The people who have experienced divorce have often remarried, and I think it's important to look at the remarriage rate as well so that you have second or third marriages. So even though there's a high divorce rate, there's still a great amount of faith and kind of hope put in marriage. And the second question was about religion, and I think it's very interesting. If you look at kind of grassroots church members, 62% of Catholics or something like that support marriage equality. Whereas that may not be the stand of the you know, order.
The church itself, yeah.
Yes, yes. So I think there's also a grassroots and kind of leadership congregant divide on these questions as well.
All right. Something Old, Something New is the Oregon Conversation Project name for the discussion about marriage. 9:30 tomorrow at the Medford Library, 1:30 at Rogue Community College in Grants Pass. Leslie Dunlap from Willamette University will be the moderator. Leslie, thanks for joining us.